the Citizens Police Review Board to order. As will happen, we always start with introductions. I'm going to actually suggest we go around the table in reverse order, more or less, because Carol is with us tonight, who is normally not here, but is substituting. So,
yes.
Carol?
Good evening, everyone. My name is Carol Rhodes, and I serve as the Assistant City Manager. And I am here tonight representing the City Manager's office because Matt Unrein is unavailable.
Peyton Oliver, City Management Fellow.
Earl Krause, City Law Department.
Stephanie Coleman, Board Member.
Doug Hunt, Board Chair.
Denise Blazek, Board Member.
Ed Robinson, Board Member.
Harry Castillo, Board Member.
The first item, which I think is perhaps uncontroversial, though our agenda may, what we do in closed meeting may be complicated by some communication problems we've been having, but I think that the items that we've got on the agenda are ones that we can do something on. Actually, I'll move the approval of the agenda. Is there a second?
I second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve the agenda. I don't think that calls for a roll call vote. I think it's a voice vote. So all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? We had an opportunity to look at the open session minutes, and we've got a couple of sets of closed session minutes, but we'll take the open session first. Is there a motion to approve the minutes of the March 12th meeting as written?
I'll make a motion. Coleman.
Coleman.
I second that.
Been moved and seconded to approve the draft open session minutes from March 12th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Same. Okay. And I think we'll take these one at a time. We've got two sets of closed session minutes. You remember that we were running a little behind on closed session minutes, but let's take the first one first, March 12th. I think everybody got their closed minutes. I know that I did. Is there a motion to approve, as written, the March 12th, 2025 draft closed session minutes?
I make a motion that we approve those closed session.
Okay, and I'll second the motion to approve that. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. And we'll move on to the closed session minutes for February 26th. I'll move that we accept the draft minutes as written. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. All in favor of approving the draft closed session minutes from February 26th, signify by saying aye.
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 All right, I think we're up to old business. The up to old business, that seems an odd way to put it, doesn't it, when you think about it? I see the draft agenda for April. Oh, yeah, that was just an attachment. Okay, the brochure update is our old business, and I warned Steph at the last minute as she came in breathing heavily, having just gotten here.
I was racing.
That because she has sort of taken the lead in some ways of trying to boil down what we might want on the draft brochure into a form that looks like a brochure. Mm-hmm. As Maury said at the last meeting, Doug tends to be a little wordy, so we sort of looked to Steph for figuring out how to perhaps something get something that looks like it would be a brochure. And I wanted to give Steph an opportunity to talk about what she's, how she's been thinking about it and working on it. Obviously, it's subject to change in detail if people see changes in detail that are necessary. But I thought I'd turn it over to you for just a minute there, Stephanie.
Well, I'll take just a minute because I don't have a lot to say. The one that we have isn't complete. That's only like the first part of it. But I did send it out, or I think Peyton did send it out to everybody that with all the information, you know, that we wanted on it. My only suggestion over the whole thing was that we make it appealing to the eye so people don't just see a bunch of paragraph writing and throw it away. because I won't read anything that's a real wordy, and nor is a lot of, you know, many people aren't going to read it. So we were just trying to bullet point, you know, the things that were important. And Doug sent a bunch of stuff that I made changes. I added, you know, changes to the wording and all that. But, I mean, as far as the graphics go, I don't care. It was just something that I found on the clip art that was, you know, so nice looking, or at least something to put in a place. So I'm not real concerned about that. It's more about the information that's there, but that we make it appealing to the eye so people will read it and know who we are and what we do.
And the idea is that the bullet points can be appealing to the eye, and further information is available if they scan, right? It'll lead to further information on the...
To the website,
right. Anybody else have any observations or thoughts about the brochure?
Words. Otherwise, we're going to get the too long, didn't read.
Right.
That's my life. If it's too long, I'm not reading it.
Right.
So.
Well, and that's a good thing, just to sort of look down the table and check on. Does the level of detail that we're looking at here correspond to people's sense about what we want on the...
I think it is, yes.
And I think that we're generally feeling pretty good about this, and I believe that the next move would be to say that we're happy with what we're looking at here. The final layout and publication is really a question for city staff, as I understand it.
That's correct. If the board approves the content that is included in the draft, the next step would be for the creative services and marketing team to take a look at the draft, make sure it conforms to the city standard branding, and then based on those standards, return a proposal to the board for their consideration.
So is this page right here supposed to be part of it, like putting it together in a smaller version?
Back.
Or is it front
or
and back?
Or is it a front and back?
I'm not certain. I have a copy of what this is, what was provided in the packet.
Yes. That's the one I created just on Canva.
So if the board is comfortable with this content, then the creative services and marketing team can, again, review for grammar, make sure it complies with the city standards, and create a proposal that is appealing to the eye, and return it to you for your consideration.
And any legal requirements?
And any?
Any legal review also?
Absolutely.
Legal review as well. Yeah, and my sense is that what we've got here could be done as a front and back, but that's for a finer designer eyes than mine. And I think you'd say the same thing, Stephanie. You're ready to say it's about the right amount of content to be handled in that amount of space.
Yeah.
And how it's done can be left to the experts.
Yeah. Because originally we were talking about it being just one of those smaller cardstock like you guys have printed. You know, something similar to that that's got everything in it. So yeah.
All right. If we're comfortable with that, we'll move on. And here's the thing that we've exchanged some notes about. Plan for analysis of 2024 complaint data for supplemental annual report. One of the odd things about operating under the Sunshine Law is we don't get a chance to talk outside this moment, so to speak, about what's going on. I think that we were having we had talked about reviewing what might have been considered complaints that were filed by citizens that didn't look like complaints when looked at by somebody, and so they were not classified and investigated as such. When I first looked at one version of a spreadsheet, it appeared that there were about, as I recall, 35 such things. And Matt, we had trouble getting that material to people, partly, I think, because Axon was in crisis, more or less, and we didn't have much space. Matt went to a lot of trouble, I think, to start doing some paper copies of those, and then thought, do we really want to circulate, have all that paper out there with all this information on it? And so we went back to the idea of somehow making it available to the board and the board only online, but at least I am not seeing enough information on there for me to feel like I can operate at this point, nor did we pursue the plan of, and I think Matt was going to be doing this, we were going to make sure that a couple of sets of eyes got on each one. You know, it wouldn't take very long, I think, but we never divided it up because, again, we never got the official pile and stuff like that. So just a sensible thing to do, it seems to me, might be to figure that we'll assume we're in the period of great change about how things are available. I don't know when Axon may be up and lively again and stuff like that, but we might assume that by the time we get to the May meeting, we can go back to the plan for what we thought we were going to do in April about those complaints. That is, go ahead and look at the question of communications from citizens that were deemed not to state an allegation of misconduct, and just see what's in there. I don't know. That's an odd sort of non-business, but I just want to make sure we're all seeing the same thing. Did anybody else get a real look at those?
Except my credentials.
Yeah, same. Okay. The same here.
So we've got two people who couldn't open the link or three people, it looks like. Four people who couldn't open the link to get in to look at that. I was, and a sort of weird sort of history lesson. What happened with me was, you may remember that Paul some time ago put up a dashboard, and I went through old emails until I found the link to that dashboard and was able to get on with the credential I used for that dashboard. Now, it's not being called a dashboard anymore. I can't imagine why anybody else, because things occurred to me at 3 o'clock in the morning. I got up at 3 o'clock in the morning and said, wasn't there something about a dashboard?
Well, I have that, and I put it, I bookmarked it on my computer, but I don't have access into it.
Yeah.
The password and everything, yeah, I didn't have access, so I did let Peyton know.
It's a Dewey over, as we all learned to say in junior high, I think. We're going to assume that we're carrying forward that review for the next meeting. And again, that will be a closed session issue. Any other thoughts about that matter of the reviews? As we said last time, I think once we look at what's on those contacts that were not considered to be complaints, the total amount of content is pretty small. We're going to be looking at something that's four sentences long on this one and three, I think, would be the typical case. So I don't think it's going to take a tremendous amount of time once we get them. It's just a question of getting them. So let's assume that that's our plan. And then we'll get on to what I think is the most important of our events under new business, which is the training on the complaint and investigation process. I'm going to introduce it, and then in a way I've asked Ed to sort of take a lead because it's an area that he knows well. So let's begin by remembering that our duty as a board is to increase police accountability to the community and community trust in the police. Obviously, taking complaints seriously is one of the keys to creating trust. CPD's official figures show that complaints are comparatively rare. In 2024, CPD responded to 114,533 incidents and reported only 61 citizen complaints.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's amazing. Now, it could indicate, and we hope that it does, and if I were running a large department store or an airline, I'd say, well, we've got a great, obviously a very high rate of customer satisfaction, and we can hope that that's what we're seeing here. But it can also indicate that people are reluctant for one reason or find it difficult to file complaints. So what we want to do is look and see whether the question is people aren't wanting to complain or whether the pipeline is difficult for them to navigate on complaints. And so that's one of the things we want to look at. So we want to look at the options citizens have for filing complaints, and then we want to look at the way the department handles the complaints that are filed, and then we want to look at and clarify our understanding of how the complaints are investigated once they reach the department. And again, I think it's very important for us to be able to communicate to the citizens, if you complain, what happens? You know, we need to understand that process real thoroughly so that we can explain it. And to help us understand it, we've asked Assistant Chief Dickinson to answer a few questions. There are 7 principal questions, and we went ahead and printed them out. They were at the back of the room, and we provided them to Paul early so that he would sort of be prepared. And then thinking about the actual session today, I asked Ed Robinson to take the lead, because Ed's experience has prepared him so well for the role. He was an officer in the Columbia Police Department early in his career, and more recently, as Deputy Inspector General for Missouri, he led a team of 25 investigators who looked into complaints for Missouri's Department of Corrections. I think you told me, Ed, that the complaints can come either way. It might be an inmate complaining about a guard complaining about an inmate.
Well, external and internal investigations.
External and internal investigations, both. So they were coming from both sides, so to speak. So each of the 7 questions, Ed can take the lead on. And Ed, you may have some follow-up questions when you hear Paul's answer that you want to ask. We can have follow-up questions from other members of the board. To be, as a matter of courtesy, since we've asked Paul to prepare for these, let's try to focus on those that's our central questions, and our follow-ups be pertinent to the ones that we provided ahead of time. And what I think we'll try to do, Ed, is we'll pause after each of the 7 questions and see whether other people on the board have an additional question they want to ask. If members of the public end up being interested in the topic, they'll get an opportunity to comment during the public comment period. But the questions need to be coming at this point from members of the board. So if you got something that you think we should ask at another meeting or something like that, feel free to comment when the public comment session comes around. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Ed and let Ed start. Ed and Paul.
Yeah, Paul. Question number 1 is it possible for a civilian to register a complaint without filing it in a written form? For instance, if someone complains in person to an officer or calls the CPD or comes to the headquarters building to complain, is that complaint assigned a number and added to the tally?
The simple answer is yes. Complaints are, filing a complaint is the process is dictated by policy, it's dictated by city ordinance, and it's dictated by state law, so that's what we follow. First and foremost, state law dictates how a complaint is handled, so that would be by state law. And state law doesn't specify what a complaint is, but it dictates how we handle the complaints and when they come in. Our policy dictates how we intake complaints, so we follow our policy. Then again, city ordinance again dictates what a complaint is, who can file those complaints, and how we handle those complaints. So again, it's dictated by state law, city policy, and city ordinance. So short answer, yes, they can.
Okay.
So, I mean, did you have...
I'm
imagining, I keep putting myself in the position of citizens. So a citizen is on a scene where they're concerned about the conduct of a police officer, and if they just walk up to the police officer and sound really concerned about this, and I want something done about it, is that followed up in a way that will produce a formal complaint, or what happens if somebody just mentions dissatisfaction with the conduct of an officer?
Again, that would be would follow city policy and the department policy, city ordinance, and state law, whatever they're complaining about.
But in that situation, what would happen? What's the policy? If someone walks up to you and says, I have, you say, well, we follow the city ordinance and the state policy, but what is that? Would that be considered a complaint or not?
No, I think, again, we're trying to think, we're thinking about a citizen who is not versed on policy. Just what are they, what was the answer that they would understand on that?
Majority of the times, an officer would give them to a supervisor, and would get a supervisor on scene to talk to that person, see what's going on. We have a very robust, I would say, internal affairs process that we follow. Mm-hmm. And that's so there's due process for, again, for the citizen and for the officer. Would direct them to a complaint form, which we have available at CPD and also at City Hall. But again, we could, a lot of times we've taken those complaints over the phone, which is fine, and we'd input that again. We've talked about Blue Team before. We'd input that into Blue Team. And then again, I'll get forwarded to Internal Affairs. A lot of times it's difficult to ascertain what the actual complaint is, and that's when we have Internal Affairs reach out to the complainant so we can ensure we understand what the complaint is.
Mm-hmm. So in a way, because people are familiar with other complaint processes, in effect, the I want to talk to your supervisor move that people use very commonly if they're unhappy with something is available to a citizen on the scene.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And then there's usually a conversation about, are we resolving this here? Or do you want to make a formal complaint and then give them that process?
Right. Any other questions? I'm gathering that one part of the answer is it becomes a formal complaint when it's reduced to writing by whatever means, but the officer on the scene can be, or the supervisor, should the supervisor be there, can be very responsive about giving them direction on how to get that done, right?
A lot of times it's an explanation. People are just looking for an explanation.
Oh, sure. I would think so. Yeah. And it's also true, I think, and I say this as somebody who taught English for so many years, if you're dealing with somebody who's just uncomfortable writing a complaint or typing in a complaint, it has to be reduced to writing eventually, but it can be expressed orally and then reduced to writing. Is that correct?
Yes.
Good.
Yeah. I have a follow-up.
Go ahead.
Paul, you had said that they're directed to the city or someplace to get access to that form. So they're given direction on how to get access to the form, where to get access. But it's not something that's provided by the officer. It's not something that the officer would have readily available.
The officers don't carry them around. They don't make forms around them with them, no.
So it's not something. Okay.
No.
Okay. Thank you.
I think on the first question.
Who decides whether a complaint includes an allegation of misconduct, therefore merits investigation, and how is that decision made?
That decision is made by Internal Affairs and the officer's chain of command, and the Internal Affairs chain of command will make that decision. And that's usually with, if it's a difficult decision, that's made with senior command staff's input. And again, we there's a city ordinance that we follow which defines misconduct.
So can you give me a step-by-step how this occurs, please?
There's no process we follow. There's no process to follow. If we see misconduct, we recognize misconduct.
Okay, so if you see misconduct, what do you do? What does that sergeant do, or what does
If
that...
Internal Affairs personnel recognize misconduct, then an investigation is launched.
You're not answering my question. I'm just trying to see what the steps are in the process.
So if someone makes a complaint, if a citizen makes a complaint, or if a supervisor makes a complaint, it goes to Internal Affairs, and it's reviewed by Internal Affairs, and if they decide, yes, that is alleged misconduct, if they allege misconduct, then an investigation would be initiated.
How does it get to Internal Affairs? Is there a report to Internal Affairs, or is it just word of mouth, or what?
The Blue Team would be entered into the Blue Team system that we've discussed before in the past. We have a reporting process that would be entered into. It's a reporting software, so it would generate an automated email that then would be emailed to Internal Affairs. They would get notification. They would then look at the narrative that person's entered. They would look at the narrative look at body cameras, things like that, then make the decision if they've alleged misconduct.
Okay.
And if I followed that, and I think I followed your line of questioning, so it gets entered on Blue Team, so Internal Affairs is going to get it's going to be visible to Internal
Absolutely.
Affairs as soon
yeah.
as it gets entered,
yeah.
is the idea.
Okay. And that's the same process if it's an internal or an external complaint. So if a supervisor just recognizes they believe something could be misconduct, they follow the same process. It goes into Blue Team and it goes to Internal Affairs.
You have something? You look like you were about to ask a question.
Not any particular process that's followed. It just seemed like it's pretty easy to decide there's never really an issue.
Hmm. Well, so the ordinance says, I'll just read it. So misconduct means any violation of federal law. That's a pretty big one, right? State law, city ordinance, city regulation, or police department policy, guideline, directive, rule, regulation, or order in effect at the time of the incident, which involves excessive use of force, abuse of authority, discourtesy, or use of offensive language, including but not limited to slurs relating to race, ethnicity, religion, gender, sexual orientation, and disability. So that's kind of like our guideline, right? So that's what we're comparing. Someone makes a complaint, does it fall in that box of a lot of stuff, right? It's a lot of stuff in there because it's not going into detail about, geez, how many city ordinance and rules and policies are there? It's kind of just generalizing all those things that we have to go through. And if that helps make a little bit more sense.
I'm hearing Paul, and that's probably my problem.
Well, and I think pertinent to your question, remember what we're trying to do at our next closed session, where we actually look at contacts that were not classified as complaints. So maybe one of our duties is to say, yeah, well, you know, we looked at what they're doing, and, you know, it makes sense to us or it doesn't make sense to us, and we can get some feedback that way. But, you know, there is the advantage of having another set of eyes there. Now, it's after the fact, very much after the fact. But, yeah, I think we understand now that IA is always going to get a look at it, and that's useful.
Mm. And that was the process that I was looking for.
Anything else on that, or should I think? Let's move on it.
Okay. Who decides what particular policies and procedures of law define the scope of an investigation? How's this decision made? If, for instance, the civilian complainant only mentions a use of force, but a courtesy investigation reveals possible violations of a body-worn camera policies, reporting policies, and search and seizures policies, will these violations be investigated?
So the first thing the investigator would do, the IA investigator, would contact the complainant, because obviously sometimes the complaints are difficult to interpret. So the investigator will contact the complainant to ensure that they fully understand the concerns. And there's a lot of questioning that goes back and forth, a lot of conversations, a lot of paraphrasing back to the complainant to ensure what they understand. That's the best way to understand what's actually going on with the complaint. Usually then you'll know what the main concerns are of the complainant. Then the investigations are undertaken by Internal Affairs or by the supervisor, depending on the class of the complaint. If there's any violations outside of the complaint of the complainant, any other allegations for that we find internally, then there's a internal complaint opened up by us, and that will be a separate investigation, an internal investigation that we carry out ourselves. And that was a separate internal investigation. And they're added to a separate investigation that's dealt internally. Or if it's a minor transgression, it'll be dealt by the supervisor.
I don't have a percentage in my mind, but I would say when you see there's usually a higher number of internal complaints than external complaints, that's part of the reason why. It's because we have a lot of rules and policies, and so we'll see administrative things that may happen, whether it's a body-worn camera or paperwork or anything like that. And so we see that, and most people wouldn't even know to complain about
right.
that. So we see those things, and then we take those steps later on. That's generally why I think those numbers are higher.
So my question with that, it would be, how would we, if we're the one, you know, reviewing something and we're looking at an external complaint, And then when we start reviewing everything, we see other things. How would we know? Do you have a documentation that still links to that case so that we would know that you've went in and done internal? Because we've come across that.
Yes, and this is a great, not trying to drag Ed and Earl into this, sorry, but with the way Senate Bill 26 interacts with everything, it gets a little strange because of the way everything has to be
closed records,
open or closed, right? And so I think that's a great conversation. I don't know how much information we can give as far as, I totally get where you're going. And we actually had a conversation about this the other day because we've had a couple instances recently where we had to split things off. So I don't know the best way to relay that information, but I think that's a conversation.
Yeah, I think that's right. And also I'm hearing, tell me if I'm understanding correctly, information coming from the police department to the board regarding a complaint is necessarily going to involve allegations made in the complaint and then all the records regarding that incident. Other things beyond that wouldn't necessarily be within the jurisdiction of the board. Now, you may see other things in reviewing all of the records, and you can make recommendations back to the police regarding those things, and that's kind of how that's captured
in the process.
Yes.
We've reviewed cases and said, hey, well, did they consider this, because we're seeing this.
Right.
But that wasn't necessarily something the complainant complained about, but we're seeing that that's a problem.
Right.
So,
and it may have
is
been
IA reviewing it and turning it into an internal on that end, or and how would we know? That's what I'm asking.
Well, exactly, because those types of things could be something that maybe the police department has addressed through some type of personnel type of process, which the board is not a part of. And since it's not a part of the complaint, you still get all the records, see all the body cams and all that, you might see, hey, there's something going on here, but it wasn't part of the complaint. So your decision and recommendations back to the chief do have to be limited to the issue in the case, I guess. And then again, if you see other things, you can make other recommendations, but there's not really a way, and it wouldn't be proper to pair up that with some kind of a separate personnel thing that may or may not be going on, because that's a whole nother thing from what the board's doing. Does that make sense?
That's extremely helpful.
Yeah.
That absolutely is extremely helpful information.
Yeah.
Now, Chief, are you able to at least say, hey, yes, we've addressed that, when we bring that to your attention that, hey, did you look at this? These are our recommendations. Would you be able to say, yeah, we looked into further or anything like that?
Yeah, we get into that personnel thing, okay, and it gets really dicey really quickly. So, unfortunately, no.
Yeah, I'm in the weeds somewhere. And what I think about is links, in effect. That is to say, imagine an external complaint that kicks off an internal complaint. That's the sort of situation that we might be talking about here. Very often, as you will have noticed, very pertinent to what Stephanie was saying, we end up attaching a note, which in effect is an informal note to you. We also noticed this, we also noticed that. And we spend some time wrestling with that. It may be that, meanwhile, exactly what we're addressing has been addressed by an internal investigation, but we have no way of knowing.
It's very common what's happened. What you're describing is extremely common.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because we do have different gradations of dealing with things. There's process that comes in when there's an actual complaint filed, but then there's coaching and mentoring conversations that go on where we sit down and watch videos and do things like that. And so that's not something that would come into that conversation.
So there are times when you have put a, like you said, training or a note in a file or something like that we don't have access to and can't have access to.
That is 100% correct.
Anything else on that? Let's move on to the next question, question 4 then.
Who decides which officers will be investigated in regard to a particular complaint, and how is that decision made?
That decision about which officer to investigate is made by reviewing complainant documentation, contacting the complainant directly, reviewing body-worn camera can assist in this determination.
And when the incident occurs, you have four officers on the scene, and does each officer write a report on what they saw, heard, or anything in that nature?
That's very case dependent, and I can't really answer that, give a specific answer to the specific. It's very case dependent.
Mm-hmm. We often see, I don't want to, if you're online, that don't let me cross, but it's pertinent to I think what you're asking here. As we said before, the complainants are not trained experts on how to file a complaint, obviously, and we see over and over again, in effect, the complaint that's the officers on the scene, you know, inappropriately did this and did that, you know, and it's sort of, it's like there might have been four, there might have been seven, and everything like that. So in a sense, a complaint hasn't been filed against a particular officer, it's been filed against all the officers, and I just don't know how we sort through that question, you know.
That's why it's important for the steps that one of the first steps taken is the IA investigator reaches out to the complainant.
Right. But I would think sometimes, Paul, that when you just start looking, like a cursory review of the body-worn camera footage or might reveal that the officer that actually initiated the difficulty that the person was having was this officer. But the complainant might not know that, right? So is there a cursory investigation that decides who's under investigation, in effect, for the serious investigation, or do we just go on the basis of the interview with the complainant?
Well, it's the complainant that's making the complaint, so we really have to go with, hey, contact the complainant, taking the complainant seriously, giving that ownership of the complaint to the complainant because they're the person that's driving the complaint. It's almost like a victim's right thing. We're not going to take the ownership of that complaint away from the complainant.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, it's the ownership for them, so we're trying to give them the ownership of this complaint. What can we do for you? How can we give you resolution to this by giving them ownership of that?
And I'll add to that just a little bit. So I think we're always trying to strike a balance, too, between making sure we're appropriately investigating and not dragging people into a process that is not pleasant.
Right.
For them, it's just not, and that's neither here nor there, but I don't want to cast a wider net than I need to either. So if someone says, oh, every officer on the scene was rude, and we watched the video and Deputy Chief Stevens never even spoke to the person, I wouldn't recommend investigating Deputy Chief Stevens for rudeness, if that makes sense.
As you said that, it sounded like, in effect, there was a cursory investigation. We looked at the body-worn camera, and Deputy Chief Stevens was not even interacting.
So yeah, I think the way Assistant Chief Dickinson's describing is there's this initial, hey, what the complainant says, and we understand people are upset, there's a lot going on. Sometimes they're making the complaint on the scene or shortly after, and so there's a lot of emotion involved. Sometimes when it's 4 or 5 days later, it's a little bit different when the IA investigator talks to them. But then we'll go back and start watching the videos, and we realize, oh, this, the scope of this is not what we thought it was. Maybe it's bigger, maybe it's narrower. But making really sure that we're only investigating the people that it's being or being the subject of the complaint, and not just throwing everybody into it because it gets and to be very blunt with you, it takes an incredible amount of staff time.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah.
To the just the paperwork shuffling that goes on because of all the requirements is incredibly time consuming. And if that's what we need to do, that's what we'll do. But when we don't need to do it, obviously, and it doesn't matter how often we tell officers, hey, there's a process. There is an incredibly detailed process that the state has now laid out. There's a lot of hoops to jump through. Like, you're going to freak out the first time you get complained on because of all this, but there is a process. They still get super nervous.
Yeah.
So we're sensitive to the fact that we don't want to catch anybody in that dragnet that doesn't need to be in it, because it is very stressful for them too.
Other questions on this kind of scope question? Good. Excuse me. I'll just sneeze and turn it over to Ed while I sneeze.
Bless you.
Thank you. Who decides whether an investigation would be handled by supervisors rather than being investigated by internal affairs, and how is that decision made?
So our policy is pretty wordy on this, I won't read it word for word, but we have class one and class two investigations. This will probably change some, I'm imagining, when we go through editing this policy as part of the CALEA process. At the time this policy was written, because I think the last revision was 18, so it's been a minute since it's been revised. Back then, our internal affairs team was smaller, and we were trying to really make sure they weren't getting overburdened, because sometimes certain investigations take a long time. There's a lot of video review, a lot of interviews to do. So we're trying to farm out investigations to supervisors that could go to a supervisor. I think, and Paul, you correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we've shifted more to, if IA has the capacity to investigate it, we like to give it to IA, because we like our supervisors on the front lines to frontline supervise. So we've shifted away from that slightly, but I would say the things that are in the policy are still accurate. So when we talk about class one and class two investigations, you know, a class one investigation are everyday things you'd think of that people do, like reporting to work late, work performance issues like late reports, minor traffic violations, foul language, things like that. And those are generally much lower level supervisor conversation. And so that's why we prefer that it be handled that level if it can. But since all this process has come into place post Senate Bill 26, and a lot of the due process has to be built in, we have to be very careful and make sure we're documenting everything appropriately and giving the officer all the due process rights that they're afforded through this process. Class two, those are obviously pretty obvious. Those always go to internal affairs, but I would say more go to internal affairs now than it did when this was written now, eight years ago, just because that's why we have internal affairs. And so if they're available, now there's times where all of a sudden we may get an uptick in complaints and they're complex and they're overburdened. And so we'll cull out some of the easier ones and assign them to supervisors to do. But our preference is that IA handles those. Is that?
Yep. Harry, you know, I just wanted to interject here that at least I have been incredibly impressed by the thoroughness of internal affairs investigations. The interviews have been very well done, and we're getting a fairly complete package. You can always worry about what wasn't in the package. You know, that's always a concern. But I've seen bad interviewers and I've seen good interviewers, and we're seeing people conduct, I think, pretty good interviews to try to understand what the complaint is about. So, okay, let's go to number six.
To what extent are IA investigations independent, and to what extent can they be influenced by command staff? For instance, when multiple officers are involved in an incident, can command staff which officers will be investigated and which will be excluded from the investigation?
So internal affairs completes the investigation, and then the final report or reports are then forwarded to the internal affairs chain of command. So once the investigators are complete, they'll be forwarded to the internal affairs sergeant, who will review the report to make sure it's thorough and complete. It's then forwarded through the Blue Team software that we're talking about. It's forwarded to Lieutenant Sinclair, who is the internal affairs lieutenant, and myself. We'll both review it, make recommendations, and then it's forwarded to the deputy chief and to the chief, who then both make findings. Any time during that process, if any person in that chain decides, hey, they need clarification, or they think they need something else looked at, it can be sent back to Internal Affairs for further investigation or for clarification. That's the process. That process is followed for every investigation. Even if it was done by a supervisor, the officer's supervisor, employee supervisor, or by Internal Affairs, that's the process that's followed on every investigation.
The one reason that I was interested in that question is that I was just reading a lot of best practice documents, and this phrase kept coming up about the independence of Internal Affairs being really crucial. And yet, independence of Internal Affairs is never defined. I don't know what that means as a practical matter, but I think the idea seems to be that once Internal Affairs starts looking at something, they can look at it and really determine the direction that the investigation goes. And I think a lot of what you were saying, Paul, had to do with how command staff follows up on the investigation and reviews it. But how about once the investigation gets launched? I'll spare you the story, but one of the best bits of advice I ever got in my life was when you delegate, delegate completely. When it goes to Internal Affairs, is it Internal Affairs ship to run?
I do not have time to look over the shoulder of an investigator. We chose the investigators because they investigate. We have a homicide, ex-homicide detective in Internal Affairs, and we have an officer that's been 15 years in Internal mm-hmm. Affairs. So they're seasoned investigators. When they're given the investigation, it's theirs to investigate. We do not look over their shoulders. The only time it goes back is if we have a question, and it goes back, hey, can you look at this as well? Because we think this is important to look at, and it'll go back, and it's, yep, we'll get that taken care of. They're good investigators. If it's a complicated case and it gets up to the chief, it is not uncommon for senior command staff to sit around a table and discuss it if it's a complicated one. So it is a team process. When it gets through the investigation and the investigation is complete, but is not a team process in the investigation.
And I'll say a little bit about the history of this. Paul and I have been in Internal Affairs together before. So we kind of had a workflow back then. The structure was a little bit different. He was a sergeant at the time and reported directly to me as deputy chief. But one of the things that I felt really strongly about was having a separation between whoever's running IA reporting directly to me, because you kind of have this double-edged sword. Internal Affairs, in my opinion, needs to have the autonomy and authority on my behalf to compel people to answer questions, to investigate, to do all those things. And so that's why they're kind of always been attached through the arms of the chief's office. We say very explicitly, like, if you're being asked a question by an IA investigator, it's as if I'm asking it. So they need to understand, and there's all these other Garrity and all these legal things we can get into, but that's really the essence of what's going on. At the same time, there has to be enough separation between me and the people doing that, because I don't want to be biased before I get the information. Now, sometimes, just honestly, there's things that are a big enough deal. Of course, I'm going to hear about it. They don't lock me in my office, even though they might like to some days. And so things will come up like, hey, heads up, this one's coming. But I try to stay as far removed as I can for that very reason, because we're trying to really, the due process piece is so important to us. Another reason why we used to, when a complaint went into the chain of command for review, once the investigation was completed, we all rotated. So if you were an assistant chief, you reviewed complaints for 3 months. If you were a sergeant, you did it every month. The lieutenant changed every 2 months. Well, that gave everybody a little relief. The problem was we had a lot of inconsistency when we did that, because you could have a 2-year sergeant and a 10-year assistant chief, and I can promise you they're probably not going to see that the same way. So that's why we changed the chain of command review to being within professional standards, because you have people that work in training, that work in professional standards, that work in IA, that see all those aspects of what we're looking at, and it's not this inconsistency, because The inconsistency is unfair to the complainant, and it's unfair to the officer, mm-hmm. because we're trying to create outcomes that make better police officers, preferably, and better communication and transparency with the public. And that's hard when you can't expect a 2-year sergeant to see something the way I'm going to, right? So that's kind of one of the ways we shifted this to hopefully make it work a little bit better.
I definitely understand what you're saying there. I had to do that a few times myself.
I can imagine.
And this final question, which actually is just asking for what I think might turn out to be a fairly simple clarification, but it could be confusing to citizens, I think.
What is the practical meaning of the statement of Section 1020.3.2 of the CPD policies? Complaints of false arrest will be investigated only when it is clear the officer acted without probable cause.
So I think it's important to understand that the internal affairs process is not a substitute, or it can't supplement, the criminal justice system. It's an administrative process. It's difficult to have two criminal processes running at the same time. If there's that cursory look that we do and we think there's something wrong, then of course we'll investigate it. But it runs. We can run afoul of the Fifth and Sixth Amendment. You can correct me if I'm wrong. If we start interviewing a defendant in the internal affairs, because we're still the government, and we also have. We could run foul of the Brady Maryland court ruling if we don't disclose information to the prosecutor and the defense attorneys, stuff from internal affairs that we get. So it's just bad practice.
When I actually wrote this, for better or for worse, I wrote a lot of this policy. and when I say I wrote it, I stole bits and pieces from a lot of departments that were CALEA accredited that I considered were operating by best practice. And that was a very consistent statement throughout. And it's because one of the most common complaints we get is, I shouldn't have gotten a ticket, I shouldn't have gotten arrested, right? And that's what they do over here across the street. However, if something did happen and say, because we're going to get flags, right? If a prosecutor doesn't file on a charge and they communicate with us, hey, because they tell us why they don't file charges, and if they're like, there wasn't, then that, I think that would initiate what you're talking about here. But absent that, we are on very shaky ground if we start. I can tell you what a public defender or defense attorney is going to say if we say, we want to talk to your client and interview them about this complaint. They'll be like, I'm going to tell them not to talk to you, right? Understandably. And it's a very precarious position for them and us. And so rather than creating this whole other set of records that can influence the actual outcome of their criminal case, it's just not a great practice.
And I think that's very understandable. But the reason I brought it up, to make the gesture, if you're a citizen, don't know how to read this, you read it and you say, well, hold it, they'll only be investigated when it's clear there's not probable cause. So how do you know whether they? It's to steer clear of what is essentially a criminal matter, right? And so it can't be investigated internally. I say that, and I want to say that publicly, because I think the public is easily confused when they have an unpleasant encounter with police officers, they don't know when an arrest becomes an arrest or something like that. So you're gonna hear a lot of stuff, I was arrested for no reason or something like that, why wasn't that investigated? Just to avoid confusion, a charge of false arrest is a very serious matter and is finally a matter for the courts to decide, and that's the reason why that's written in there. So I think people need to understand that.
And would be vigorously investigated were that to be the case.
Questions on that one? This has been very useful, and I deeply appreciate your answers, and I deeply appreciate your coming. I think that's...
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Can I say one thing? So I haven't met some of you, so I'm Jill Schlute. I'm the police chief, and I brought most of my staff here. One of them escaped. He had to go to a wrestling banquet, which that's okay. We'll get him later. But Deputy Chief Matt Stevens is on the end. Right. Assistant Chief Mark Fitzgerald. So Matt's my second in command. Assistant Chief Fitzgerald's over the patrol bureau. So he has a lot of the folks that you see come through. Assistant Chief Hunter's over our patrol support. So he has things like the airport, traffic, special events, school resource officers, homeless outreach team, a lot of stuff. Obviously, you know Assistant Chief Dickinson, and then Assistant Chief Bollinger, who is not here, is over investigations. So thank you all. I just wanted to make sure we all kind of knew who we all were.
Right. Well, I appreciate your being here. I feel like we've absorbed a lot of your time, but this really was useful. And I think terribly important that it be said in public where people can look at the recording when they want to and understand the process better. So
thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you all.
I think Steph Yocum is ailing tonight and will not be here, so we won't be getting a report on the, from the Human Rights Commission. So let's move to general comments, first from the public, and then from members of the board and staff. And again, I'm not ordinarily a timekeeper, so I don't know if somebody else can at least informally do it. But if a member of the public would like to comment, they get 3 minutes as individuals. Or if they're representing a group, they can take 5 minutes. Is there any member of the public who would like to make a comment? I don't think we're going to have a use for it, as it turns out. Let's then move, if there are no members of the public, general comments by members and staff. I actually do have a comment, if nobody else does.
I'll let you go first, Paul. I might make a comment. I don't know. Go ahead. No. You go ahead.
All right. All right. No. Okay. You know, we've been dealing with complaints tonight. I think any organization that is really trying to improve itself listens to complaints and compliments. I'm frustrated because for a while, and it's early going, the board had a regular feature of positive contacts and stuff like that. We can no longer officially, according to the most recent state law, do anything but investigate complaints. Nonetheless, I want to put a compliment on the table. So here's the situation. A couple of Sundays ago, a very nervous young woman with a badly bruised face appeared at the door of Wilkes Boulevard Church. She was a homeless newcomer to Columbia, and she explained that she didn't have a cell phone and needed to call the police. CPD officer appeared very quickly and began to talk with her extensively, didn't hurry. He was calm, he was sympathetic. Eventually he gathered the details he needed to file a thorough report on the assault. So it's a good piece of work already, but he went a step beyond. He searched through a database until he found a missing person report the young woman's mother had filed on her daughter. He called the mother to say that the daughter was safe. Then he arranged for the daughter to call her mother and, to the extent possible, ease both their minds. The mother and daughter are in contact again. Whether the story has a happy ending is finally up to them and to no one else. I don't know the officer's name, but he deserves to be commended. So I just wanted to say that. All right.
I do for staff.
Yeah, staff, of course.
Just a point of clarification. I believe at the last meeting you talked about having some type of a training discussion like you did at this meeting with regard to complaints. You'd also mentioned potentially in May discussing some, for training purposes, the blue team process. Mm-hmm. Is that something you're still interested in doing for May?
I think the blue team process is somewhat of a mystery to us still in some way. So and I don't think it would take perhaps very long to get that explanation, but I think it would be very useful because we'd have a much broader picture of what's going on there. So, yeah, that would be great, I think, to add that to the agenda.
Very good.
Other comments by staff? All right. I'll entertain a motion to go into closed session to discuss records which are protected from disclosure by law. under section 610.02114 and section 590.502 revised statutes of Missouri. Is there a motion to go into closed session?
I'll make that motion. Coleman?
I second it.
It's been moved and seconded, and this one is a roll call vote, as I recall. So we'll just go through the roll then. I think he was doing you.
Oh, I thought you said Denise.
Denise. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, you're going alphabetically,
yes.
Right.
I am not Denise.
I didn't hear right.
Denise? Yes. Harry?
Yes.
Stephanie?
Yes.
Doug?
Yes.
And Robinson?
Yes.
All right, we'll go into closed session and go into, as I recall, room 1A and 1 or whatever it is upstairs.